Up on the Gold Coast this week, some of the nation's top cybersecurity experts, the kind of people who keep our ATM network secure, our work networks, the government, the military, those sorts of heavy-duty cybersecurity people have been getting together to talk about future threats. And at the conference was Stil Gerian, technology writer for ZDNet. He often writes for Crikey and the Drum websites as well. And we're going to chat to him now about the kinds of threats that are potentially could damage our information systems. G'day, Stil Gerian.
G'day, Dom. How are you?
I'm very well. You've had a couple of full-on days up there in the Gold Coast. Scary days, were they, talking about potential cyber threats?
Absolutely. My editor has told me when I filed a story this afternoon, she emailed back when I sent a second revision in and she said, nah, I still don't understand this story. I think your brain's imploded. Go away and sleep on it across the weekend and we'll figure it out on Monday. This is the AusCert conference, AUSCERT, AUS for Australia, of course. CERT is Computer Emergency Response Team. And pretty much every country, every major network has one of these computer emergency response teams. Telstra's got one internally. And these are the guys who are essentially protecting the network against the hackers. And when something goes down, they're the guys and girls who figure out what the heck has happened, how they're going to defend against it, how they're going to get the hackers out of the system, and then, okay, what have we learned for next time? So rather than people trying to flog you some sort of technology, it's full of military, police, spooks, law enforcement, and, you know, guys and girls who you only ever find out their first name, and then when they find out you're a journalist, they kind of wander away.
You must feel at home, given that you only have a first name, Stil Gerian.
That's right, and I managed to cross the barrier a bit because I have kind of dabbled at the edge of this work, and I did do the kind of technical background, so they kind of like me.
That's good.
Because last year a journalist ended up getting arrested, but that's another whole story.
Oh, I remember that, yes. So these are the sentinels who keep essentially our information networks, or theirs if they're from big businesses, safe from hackers. Because nowadays, hackers with fairly rudimentary gear can shut down websites, can't they? If they hook together a whole bunch of computers and get them to all log on, say, to the ABC website, the ABC website goes down.
Absolutely. That's called a denial of service attack. And all you do, it's you just get as many computers as you can, but you don't need to necessarily infect these computers and take them over and put them under your control. Hacktivist groups such as Anonymous just have enough members to say, hey, all right, on a certain date at a certain time, we will all gang up, we will run software on our computers that generates massive amounts of traffic to the website. And even a big website like the ABC's is configured to deal with a certain amount of traffic. And if it suddenly gets 10 times, 100 times that, it just can't cope. Its service is denied, and that's why it's called a denial of service attack. And you don't need any brains whatsoever to do this. You just need to download the software and do it. And it's actually that's one problem. But more insidious are the guys who do have the deep technical knowledge and know how to break in. Now, obviously, for a bank, the risk is obvious. They're going to steal money. For, you know, a military system, again, they, you know, will they steal national secrets?
Can they hack into the missiles?
Secrets? Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, can they take over a military system? And there has been a case where hackers managed to break into a NASA system interfere with a satellite positioning. Now, that wasn't your common or garden variety hacker. That's generally believed to have been someone, as they say in the trade, a nation-state actor.
Oh, I see. Well, I suppose that people are talking about these sorts of threats now and potentially warfare being conducted on this basis. But, I mean, just to reassure people listening, Stil Gerian, I assume that to hack into the nuclear missiles in the US, you don't just go to, you know, nuclearmissiles.gov, type in the password, and you can launch a strike.
That's right. The password's password one, and then you type in nuke space and the city name. No, I mean, it just doesn't work like that. There are many complex layers of defences on those sorts of systems. Same with banks, same with any secure system. The problem is the bad guys are getting better and better. And when it comes to nation states, they're prepared to spend millions and millions of dollars on doing this stuff. And it's now pretty open knowledge that all of the major countries are the United States, Russia, China, France, Britain, India, Pakistan, Iran, Israel, all have offensive cyber warfare teams in some way, shape or form. One of the presenters, actually, Mikko Hipponen, who he's from a Finnish company called F-Secure, who are a security company. No one's ever heard of them because their clients are all the telecommunications companies. But he's their head of research, and he did a very basic search. He said, look, go onto the employment websites, look for the jobs that are available at the big defense contracting companies like Lockheed Martin, one called SAIC, which is not as well known, Northrop Grumman. And he said, all right, how many of these companies are advertising jobs with certain search terms that, you know, we know are associated with this kind of work? And there are literally hundreds of jobs available for people to develop offensive malicious software, if you like, cyber weapons.
So people in the highly skilled hackers who used to just sort of break into these things for fun are now worth huge, huge salaries as a potential weapon.
Absolutely. And these skills are very much in short supply. And if you have an evolution of the hacker, and this is grossly oversimplified, but essentially the first, when I say hackers, the criminal ones, because there's the old sense of the word hacker, which was just someone who enjoyed experimenting with the technology. But these days, hacker in popular usage means, you know, someone doing something to break into a system or whatever. Now, they used to be the technological enthusiasts who broke into systems just for the joy of learning about them.
Yeah, and so Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs used to break into long-distance telephone
calls.
Yeah, free calls.
Julian Assange of WikiLeaks. When he was, you know, an 18, 19-year-old, he was doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, just for fun, as opposed to now, where, of course, he's obviously definitely a criminal. That's a joke.
Indeed, because he hasn't actually been charged with anything by anybody.
Absolutely.
What then happened is some of these guys turned crime. And then when they started being successful, the organised criminals went, guys, you know, you may know how to use the computers, but as criminals, you're amateurs. We know how to organise big international criminal operations, launder the money and so on. So what you need to do is we'll hire you. You show us how to break into 100,000 computers in the weekend and on the weekend and steal everyone's credit card numbers. So that's kind of happened. And as the sophistication has grown, the nation states, their militaries and so on, in parallel to that, have started to realise, well, if we want to disable a power station, say, the traditional way was you'd have to send in fighter bomber aircraft, drop bombs. You then run the risk of the planes being shot down, the pilots being killed, collateral damage and civilians being killed and injured. Doesn't look good on the telly. But if you can infiltrate their control network, the computer network that controls the power station or controls the electricity grid, and shut it down, well, there's three advantages. One is it's a heck of a lot cheaper. Two, you've got plausible deniability because this could be hackers from anywhere. And three, you haven't hurt anyone.
Yes, it's interesting. And in any movie you can think of where there's some sort of attack going on, there's always one person, it's almost always a dude, who's can basically hack into any system. And that's just a precursor for any blockbuster these days, just this one person, like in Mission Impossible, who can just sit in a van and just get in anything, open any lift, all that sort of stuff.
It doesn't work like that. These in fact, to create these kind of sophisticated cyber attacks, and I hate the word cyber, but let's go with
cyber
it.
Cyber is very passe, yes.
Yeah. But there's lots of different skills involved. So you need a team of people. You need someone who understands the firewalls that protect these networks, and you need someone who understands the industrial controllers they use to control a power station, and someone else to do testing, and someone else to make sure this is delivered into this network in a way, so on and so forth.
Now, okay, so you need 11 people like Danny Ocean.
Absolutely. Of course 11. But it's 12 in the new movie. I don't know.
But the, look, I mean, but the thing is, this can be done, presumably. I mean, if there was war or some sort of tension, you could imagine potentially, say, a mobile phone network being taken out in a country. If you imagine, say, some of the conflict in the Middle East, I imagine the Americans probably were trying to, say, shut down Iraq's communications capabilities ahead of attacks.
Sure, and there's been a lot of speculation about that, but there's one case we know of for sure, because it actually happened a couple of years ago, and all the InfoSec geeks are going to tune out now, because I'm going to mention the Stuxnet worm. But it really has been a year now since that became well known. This was an attack against Iran's uranium enrichment program. And what happened is that a bit of software that was written and infiltrated into the control network that controlled the centrifuges that enriched the uranium that Iran was using for its nuclear power program and to develop, presumably, an atomic bomb. And what this worm did is it worked its way through the network until it found a particular kind of industrial controller, and then it worked out, is this industrial controller controlling this specific type of centrifuge that enriches the uranium? And then it did two things. It first started feeding back to the operator's console telemetry that said everything is working normally. So the operators thought, oh yeah, this equipment is all running fine. What it then did is spun the centrifuge up to its higher speed and kept it running until it overheated and broke.
Wow.
Now,
that's
no one
so
is
clever.
It's incredibly clever. And if this worm replicated through any other network, we kind of found out about it. We being Western nations found out about it because it turned up in other control networks around the world, and everyone went, well, what's this thing? It doesn't seem to be doing anything except replicating around, because unless it was in this absolutely specific environment, it didn't do anything.
Right, I see.
So if you like, even it comes back to why these sorts of weapons are attractive. If you put landmines out, well, anyone could step on them and blow their foot off, including like a kid. And that's why, there's the movement to ban landmines. This sort of thing, in theory, if software works perfectly, and as we all know, all computer software works perfectly
all the time.
It will only attack the specific target, harmless otherwise. Now, what we do know about this is no one's owned up to it having done it, and Iran has not acknowledged it as an attack, so therefore it doesn't become a cyber war incident because there's all sorts of legal definitions of what an act of war is, and one of the conditions is the person on the receiving end has to claim it as one.
But you can imagine that behind closed doors, people are A, trying to work out how to defend themselves against that kind of thing, and B, trying to develop the capability themselves.
Absolutely. And look, it's generally believed that this one was produced by the United States, possibly with or without Israel's help. Now, you ask America, no one knows for sure, but that's kind of pretty much
in
what
terms of people with an interest in stopping Iran from
developing bombs. Who has an interest
on the list?
Who has the capability? How would you do it? And there aren't many people who can do this. But we do know that people are developing similar sorts of things. So the kind of fear, if you're going the worst scenario, that someone would do a massive attack, release many, many kinds of malicious software like the Stuxnet worm, and you might have one would infiltrate into the power network and shut down power stations. So, that would go down. Telephone exchanges could be shut down. The water system could shut out, cut off running water. You could infiltrate an oil refinery and either shut it down or configure it in a way so it exploded. Get into... this thing's used for everything from controlling the way trains run and the points that switch trains between tracks on some rail networks are controlled by this sort of thing. But so anything in the world where physical stuff has to be manipulated, these industrial controllers are involved somewhere.
Yeah.
And it turns out, and this is the kind of sad bit, these networks were always assumed to be separate from the internet. You go, all right, well, these are just control networks and so on. Their security is not that good. And
uh-oh.
It was the assumption that These were separate networks, so they didn't have to be secure. The problem is people would cross-connect the network, so it would be things like the operators at the workstations also want to check their email. So we'll connect this workstation also to the internet so they can check their email while they're operating the power station. Or you have to bring in the software updates, or a contractor will bring in his laptop. And It was about 10 years ago, maybe 2002, 2003. There was a massive blackout across the northeast of the United States. Power went down, you know, millions of people lost their power for a night or two. It is believed that what happened is that a contractor brought his laptop in to work on the power grid somehow, plugged it into the internal network. His laptop was infected with one of the viruses back then, the blaster virus, I think, from memory, and it started replicating through this network, which hasn't been updated properly because everyone assumed it wasn't connected to the internet. Something shuts down because it isn't working properly, and all these, you know, the power network's design, uh-oh, something's wrong, we better shut down this system
completely
to prevent damage.
Yeah.
You know, and then that would overload the next one. It said, so that one's now overloaded. Oh, that better shut down. And this domino effect went right across the northeast of the United States. I don't think anyone really understands what happens, but
someone really needed to tweet.
Yeah, well, see, if we had Twitter, it would have solved everything, obviously, because we would have just tweeted very loudly that it needs to be fixed, and it'd be fixed.
No, but this is pretty scary in terms of scenarios still, Gary, but you've just been at this AusCert conference on the Gold Coast talking to people who are trying to work out how to combat these systems. How, I suppose we don't know entirely until the attacks potentially come, but how's it looking? How are we placed to defend ourselves in Australia?
Look, the general feeling is that cyber Pearl Harbor, a massive attack where everything is shut down, is pretty unlikely. For a start, you don't want to shut down, let's say, the communications network, because you need that and everyone needs that for the financial systems to run, and that would cause all sorts of collateral damage, and no one would die, but no one would be able to conduct business. And these days, conducting business is the most important thing in the world, obviously. and also, a lot of these weapons, once you use them, the CERTs, the Computer Emergency Response Team, is going to sort of go, I see what you did, and now we know how to defend against it. So you only get to use them once.
Yes, of course.
So what seems to be happening is that they're being stockpiled, and we're at the stage of understanding it. There's probably not going to be some sort of sudden weird attack, but there is the potential for weird things, and possibly there is a sense that there was more of a sense of this last year, a little bit this year, that the organised criminals might try something instead. Because the extortion racket's happening online. People who run online gambling sites or financial services sites, they're already threatened by sort of a denial of service attack or a hack, or there's a thing called ransomware where people break into your computer, encrypt all the files so you can't access them, and then essentially say, if you want access to all of your files, you're going to have to transfer X dollars through this money transfer service and give us this code number, and then we'll give you the contents of your computer back.
That sounds very, very scary. Let's hope our boffins are up to the job of defending it. Finally, Stilgarian, there's always been a perception that these sorts of attacks, I guess, in the domestic sphere, malware, viruses coming into your computer and taking it over, that if you had Apple computers, there's been a perception that you were immune to that. Is that what people at AusCert are saying? Are certain kinds of computers safer than others?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's certainly a place where you don't see many people with Windows computers. And that's a kind of indicator that all of the guys doing a lot of work with security do tend to be using Macs. But, I mean, that was an Apple advertising campaign at one point.
Yes.
So we have just recently seen some attacks on Macs. There is no reason why they aren't attackable. A lot of it's got to do with how you use the computer, how you make sure it's up to date, and so on. Now, at the moment, the bad guys and the criminals are making plenty of money by hacking into Windows-based computers and doing all that stuff. And on the desktop, that's still 90% of computers. But organized crime is just a business. And as Apple gets a bigger market share, particularly in the laptop market, particularly in the mobile phone market, and I will actually flag the Android smartphones and tablets as well. They're also a problem. They're now getting to the point, there's enough of them out there, that the criminals are going, it's probably worth us looking at this. Now, a couple of weeks ago, maybe 2 months ago now, a network of infected Macs was discovered online, and it ended up being more than 500,000. It was about 600,000 Macs were infected and taken over by the criminals. And most of them appear to have been cleaned up now. I haven't seen the numbers just recently. It's a bit of a warning sign. What's interesting is that there's a guy called Eugene Kaspersky. He's head of Kaspersky Lab, and they're the big Russian information security company. They're about I think they're about number five in the world in terms of their market share and the amount of business they do. A few weeks ago, he made the controversial comment that Apple is 10 years behind Microsoft when it comes to security. Now, I agree with him, and there's a few people I was talking to at the conference too who also agree with him. And the reason is this, that 10 years ago, Microsoft Windows was a security nightmare. It was a mess. They had the Blaster Worm, the Sasser Worm, the Nimda Worm, and a whole lot of others. So many computers around the world infected that Bill Gates was still CEO at that point, and he essentially told the company, sent out an all-staff memo that said, basically, guys, if this isn't fixed, no one's going to buy our stuff. So Microsoft launched into this massive reorganization and a complete re-engineering of the way they built their software. And now, 10 years later, there have been massive, massive improvements. And funnily enough, even though people have this perception of Microsoft as the evil empire, they're actually now one of the most open companies when it comes to talking about their security problems.
Well, that's the thing, they've had to be because in order to keep the market. Apple hasn't had the problems, so they probably haven't applied the fixes in the same
Correct.
Way.
Correct. They're still in the mode that if you want to talk to Apple about security, their response is, we don't talk about security issues until we've investigated the problem and there's a fix available. And you sort of go, well, what if there is a problem and you haven't investigated properly and there isn't a fix available yet? Well, they don't even have a dialogue
that
about
it. That scenario could never happen, Stilgarian.
Never happened because exactly, because it comes back to our first point, all software works perfectly as advertised every time.
Yes, oh gosh. So what does that mean for consumers? Is that a theoretical thing? Do people need to throw away their Apple computers and go and buy Windows computers tomorrow?
No. It doesn't mean you throw them away, but what it does mean is that if you're running your Apple computer without antivirus and other protective software, you probably need to think about that. There are free and quite good antivirus tools starting to be available and for domestic use. Businesses can contact them as well. And I just say it's, you know, we can't name brand names here, of course, but if you basically go down the list of the top security companies and try them, you'll find that pretty much most of them can help you in some way.
We should probably note, when you talk about Eugene Kaspersky, he sells those products, doesn't he? So he may have an interest in the perception. Or you're obviously independent in these matters and you agree with that point. And I've seen others say that online, that now Macs are more vulnerable simply because of the illusion of security.
That's right. It comes back to that. If you're working at sitting on a Mac and you think you can't be infected, you are not as likely to stop and think before you click on a link.
Yes, like those people in the power station who didn't bother to do the security updates because they thought it would never get connected to the internet.
That's right, and little do they know someone did. And in fact, one of the stories told was that they built a new power station in the United States and found that some of the computers running the control software had actually been infected before they'd even built the power station, and they traced it back to the company that made these controller computers. One of their employees, late at night, had plugged his MP3 player into his computer workstation. That MP3 player was infected. It infected the computer he worked on. That then infected computers that were being prepared to build this new power station, and the power station was infected before it even went online.
Oh, gosh, which is the sort of thing that keeps your cybersecurity people up at the AusCert conference. awake at night, I expect.
Absolutely. Look, I suppose if we want to end on a more positive point, there's a lot of smart people working on this problem.
Yeah.
And because we have had such an enormous high profile of cybersecurity issues in the last 12 to 18 months, we had the hacktivists Anonymous and Lulzsec, and they attacked the News Limited and took the Sun newspaper offline, and we've got hacktivist wars happening all over the place. Well, I won't list them all now.
Yeah, they're good ones. They're called white hats or something, aren't they?
White hats are our guys.
Oh, there you go.
It's just like watching a Western movie. The white hats, you know, everyone's got a gun, but yeah. The guys in the white hats are the good guys, and in the information security thing, even the hackers wearing the white hats, they're the good guys, and a subset of them are the guys called penetration testers. They're the guys who learn how to hack into systems, but they're testing our defences, that a bank will hire them to just test that the bank is secure, and so on. The good news is that there's a lot of work going into this defensive work. The bad news is that those penetration testers, they never fail. They always find a way to get in.
Yeah, that is funny.
They're crazy guys. Yeah, this is cool.
They have those competitions, can you hack X new computer or phone or whatever, and they always can. It's quite extraordinary.
They always can. The question is, how long will it take? Will I be detected? You know, how much money is it going to cost you? And it all comes down on the organised crime side. It's, well, business is business to organised criminals. But that said, they're making millions and millions of dollars. When it comes down to the military, well, here's the interesting thing. You know, if you want to get a fighter jet, you go, well, it's, you know, $50 or $100 million for this fighter jet, and it's $200,000 for every guided missile you drop, and rah, rah, rah. That Stuxnet worm I told you about that infected the uranium nuclear enrichment program, that probably only cost a few million. If that, maybe a million.
It's quite asymmetrical, isn't it?
Bargain basement stuff.
Yeah. Finally, Stigarin, at the AusCert conference, what do people do when they're not in sessions? What was the small talk? What were the social events for these people who won't even say their names? Sorry?
Not in sessions. Drink beer, pretty much.
That's it. No.
I'm just curious
because it sounds very, like a lot of people there were very secretive, and I'm wondering how the social side of things worked.
The social side, it's a conference where a lot of regular people there. As I say, it's curious. You do get to exchange jokes over collecting your breakfast in the morning with senior police officers or other things. As a media person, it's interesting. You are sometimes told stuff off the record. You are told some background that will be useful in the future.
You've been gathering intelligence yourself.
That's my job.
And what was the gender ratio there at AusCert?
Approximately 400 males to 3 females.
What a week up on the Gold Coast. Thank you very much for telling us about all that stuff. I really hope that the White Hats can do their thing, because I'd hate it if they took down Twitter, let alone the ATM network.
I think Twitter going down would screw us up more than worrying about the banks.
It'd be a disaster. Thank you so much for joining us, Stigarin.
Cheers, Dom, anytime.
And you can find his writing on The Drum, Crikey, ZDNet, bunch of other places as well. Stigarin.com is his page. And, of course, his Twitter account as well.